Hello, everyone. My name is David Smith, and this is the Armchair Commentary. On this week's episode, we're talking about the bane of my media-liking existence. That's right, the talking head of the most talkingest heads, Skip mother-effing Bayless. Skip goes on a rant this week, and Steve and I break down what actually happens when someone discloses their mental illness and not what trash bag media thinks about it. We also talk about Raptors, baseball, and just about anything else that's happening. And if you're listening to this episode just after we publish it, we talk about week one and the NFL, in particular game one, and how it is an unmitigated disaster. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button. Give us a like on socials. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And give us a follow on the socials as well, at SteveSteele23, at ArmchairCommon2, and at Armchair Commentary. So without further ado, F you, Skip Bayless. We're back again this week. Steve and I having all the conversations about all of the sports that are going on. It is opening week of football, and you could be not less interested. Am I right? Are you not feeling the football season this year?
It's not that I'm not feeling football season. It's just the NBA playoffs, super trump NFL football. It's not even comparable. Like, Football is a sport that I watch when pretty much, like, you know, basketball's in the doldrums of midseason. We've already discovered how much I care about modern hockey.
So yes.
Football is a sport I follow to engage in conversation with men my age, if that makes sense. My love for the NFL died a long time ago.
I am still very much in love with the NFL and cannot wait for this to get started tonight. Any thoughts on Chiefs Texans?
The Chiefs are going to win by 30 or 30, whatever they won by in the playoffs, plus 5.
I also think the Chiefs are going to win, but I think that it'll be a little closer. I'm hoping for a shootout, to be honest with you. Usually Thursday games and opening night games are they're pretty awful. I mean, we've seen some pretty just rancid opening night games on, especially on Thursdays. Thursday night football has been bad for so long, it's not even funny. But I just think that it'd be nice to have a shootout for a change. It'll be weird seeing places like Arrowhead and whatever they're calling Seattle Stadium now, because those places were notoriously deafening for defenses, and I don't know how that's going to play out this year. You basically lose that advantage of home field, and it's just, you know, your calls versus their calls and see who can outplay. So I don't know, we'll see what happens. It'll be something. I don't know if it's going to be good or bad yet, and I'm holding out hope that it'll be semi-passable. That said, something that is incredibly passable and heart attack worthy, the NBA playoffs. You're number one. Last night we watched
arguably the best playoff basketball games in the history of basketball, is what you're trying to say. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. The cardiac Raptors doing their best to kill many, many people last night. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I mean, the game itself was back and forth, and it felt like the Raptors had an opportunity a few times to kind of close out, and Boston hung around, and
Toronto hung around too. Both teams had chances to close it and didn't.
Yeah.
They went back
and forth. I want to say last year, you gave your opinion on this player as someone that you could make, you know, take or leave. And this playoff, he's been much more improved, and the opposite is said about the other guy that I'm going to ask you about. So where do you stand on OG Anunoby? And I know that Pascal has had a rough series. Are you done with the Siakam thing right now? Do you want to, I mean, I know you don't want to pay him as a number one, and we talked about that I guess last time we were talking Raptors for a minute.
Last week.
But where do you sit on OG Anunoby? Because people are getting are feeling a lot better about OG than they were last year.
Well, I mean, last year he had appendicitis and got them removed before the start of the playoffs and never played a single playoff game. So that was a glorious run in Raptors history he was not a part of. So it's unfair. I mean, OG Anunoby was a guy that got hurt in college, I believe in Indiana. Yeah, I think it was a knee or an ankle. I can't remember what it was. And it severely impacted his draft stock. And he was just kind of finding himself his first couple of years in the league. But we brought him in as a rookie and thought, like, yeah, he's a great defender. He can be our new LeBron stopper because the Raptors love to groom LeBron stoppers. Didn't really work out for him, obviously. But not that there has been a lot of successful LeBron stoppers. Actually, come to think of that, there has been no successful LeBron stoppers. But anyway, here nor there. I mean, the closest was Kawhi and the Spurs, but whatever. Yeah, that said, I like OG Anunoby. OG Anunoby is a solid starting NBA basketball player. If you're going to expect OG to go on to superstardom of what we're seeing here, it's probably not going to happen. But OG Anunoby is a more than serviceable, very good, very well-rounded, extremely well-rounded NBA player. Like he's perfect. To try to draw a comparison to him would be tough. Like he's like kind of like
I put him as above average though. I don't think he's like.
Well, no, he's not average because an average NBA player is not a well-rounded basketball player. So I mean,
and that's fair.
OG's fine. Like okay, like if this is NBA 2K, I give OG like an 85, 84. Like he's very good. Like he's a lot of holes in the game. You know what I mean? Like he does everything well. I can't be like OG kills me when he does. Like none of those things. Like, I don't have a follow up to that. And I can be highly critical of the Raptors. Like as I'm about to be a Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam's scoring woes are not my concern. I think a lot of people are giving him flack because he's not scoring. He's in a tough matchup. The Celtics have the perfect guys to neutralize him, and their system is very efficient in doing so. My issue.
I also think he's forcing it a bit right now.
Of course he is.
The buck is not going down, and forcing it doesn't help it.
But there's so much more to basketball than just scoring the basketball.
Yes. Like holding on to the basketball.
Yeah. So OG constantly trying to dump back down on Jaylen Brown, trying to dribble with his left hand, constantly leads to turnovers because he has no left hand. There's no flaw in that. There's lots of guys that can't dribble with their left hand. You probably can't dribble a ball with your left hand unless you're left-handed. With your left-handed very well. Like I'm not very good at it. It's not like, you know, he's not the worst. Like he has been the worst, probably the worst player in this series as far as Toronto's like getting full-time minutes. But, like, he's still a very good defender. He still does a lot of things very well. It's just he constantly – he's forcing it. You nailed it earlier, but it's not just shots. He's forcing everything. And when he's trying to force things – but he's not just forcing it. He's forcing passively. He's not being strong. He's not being decisive. Yeah. He's passively forcing things and just making mistake after mistake.
And you saw that offensively when he was I don't remember if it was overtime or the fourth quarter. And he had a corner three and everybody backed off him and they were like, go ahead. And he like, it looked like he was trying to up fake for a second, but there was no one around and he just looked tentative and then he shot. It was just a bad take. There was no reason to take the shot when he took it. There were better options around and I feel like he just needed something to fall and it just isn't going to happen that way. Honestly, he would be better served to focus on the things that he can control, like, you know, playing guys tough defensively, not giving the ball away when you do have possessions. I know that Fred and Kyle have tried to say, you know, try to talk him up a bit and say they're trying to get him going. But if you're forcing and you're pushing like that, it usually doesn't end well, you know, unless you're a very select few people. I don't know. I like Pascal. I think that he's probably got a future, but I don't like this version of Pascal and it's hard to watch. There were a few times where you're like, you're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me.
Oh my God.
He walks in and you're like, oh, brutal.
I'll tell you a quick story. The owner of the sneaker store I sometimes work at has been like at war with all the Siakam hate that Twitter's getting. Because like I said, a lot of the criticisms he's getting are unfair. The offensive struggles, not a lot of guys are exactly lighting it up against the Celtics defense. This is a fantastic, suffocating, well-coached, well-executed defense. They're not the Phoenix Suns or the Atlanta Hawks where you can just score 140 on them. That is a very good defense. You can tell by the scores of the games every game. Yes. These two teams are a defensive struggle. But again, I want to reiterate, it's not as scoring. I know it's very easy to look at a stat sheet in basketball and see how someone impacts a game. He's doing other things defensively that he is helping the Raptors, but offensively he has been a nightmare because the offense is still semi-designed around him. So he still gets all the touches and he gets all the looks and he's making all the mistakes. But the guy from Courtside last night finally snapped on Twitter and was like, he needs to stop using his left hand. I was like, finally, he told me to fuck off like three times about this. Like, he's like, you're being irrational. He's young. It's only his third season, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't care if it's his third or 33rd season. These are the playoffs. Like, I don't care if they're rookies or not. If they're playing full minutes, like Siakam played 52, 51 minutes last night. He's not some young developing player. He's one of our three best players. Like, he has to do something. He's our highest paid player. He's you know, like, it's important that he delivers. So
you said it in our group chat with friend of the show, Justin. Nick Nurse rolls with seven guys. And that's Siakam's one of the seven. If he's not performing, then we're rolling with six, and that's tough. And then when you factor in that Ibaka's not 100%.
Looked great last evening.
He did. He looked well. And I mean, when he's 100%, he looks amazing.
Looked amazing this year. Ibaka, you could tell was kind of hurt because he wasn't really elevating on things. Like, he wasn't very vertical. Like, Ibaka's not the leaper and blocker that he used to be. But you could tell there was a timidness in the jump shots and the closeouts and everything else. And it was the ankle was not 100%, but he was still knocking down threes, which is something he doesn't do consistently normally. And he's still great offensively. And look, man, even Marc Gasol.
I was about to say Gasol.
Even Gasol got beat last night, blocked a shot, hit a three, hit a turnaround jumper. Like, he looked like he was coming to life a little bit. God, I hope he comes to life. We need him to come to life.
Yeah, me too. Last thing on the Raptors, and I'm just going to gush a little bit. How many statues of Kyle Lowry do we build?
I mean, I still think Kawhi deserves a statue, but I think we can build three Kyle statues. We can put them all around the GTA. I think Kyle laying out for a charge should be out in front of the stadium. Like, I feel like it can be a statue walkway, like something out of a video game where you walk up the concourse. I think that could really work. I think the Kyle smile, that's a terrible rhyme, but the Kyle smile after the Ananobi shot should be a statue in front of the building. And I believe, like, you know, just Kyle Lowry in general, like that, holding a bulldog, because that's what everyone likes to call him. I think that would make a great statue too. I don't know, man. I am enamored and forever will ever. I'm not here for any Kyle Lowry slander at all.
No, I was always a fan of K-Lo. I loved Kyle. I thought he was I thought he was the heart of the team for a long, long time, and he's kind of carried them, and it's kind of been up and down, and there was some conversation about replacing him with Fred, who I also am a big fan of, but I don't know if you could ever replace someone like Kyle. He's more than Vince Carter ever was. He's more than Chris Bosch ever was. And I do firmly believe that when he's done, he should be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. There's lesser basketball players in the Hall of Fame than Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry will be a Hall of Famer. He may not be first ballot, but he'll be a Hall of Famer.
And I believe that he's likely the greatest Raptor of all time. I know you're definitely on the Kawhi side of things, but
Kawhi's the greatest individual basketball player to ever play for the Raptors. Like,
that's a fair point. Yeah.
I don't think Kyle Lowry is Mr. Raptor. Don't get me wrong. Like, he is the best tenured Raptor ever, hands down. There's no arguments. Like, if there's a criteria of playing for the team for more than 2 years, Kyle Lowry is the guy. Period. It's not even close.
Yesterday in baseball, a couple of things that stood out for me. So one, the Jays are still very much cruising along, although they hit a bit of a speed bump yesterday. They're firmly in, I think, second place in the division and likely making the playoffs at this point, knock on wood. But two things stood out to me. The Brewers beat the Tigers 19-0, and that wasn't the craziest score of the day.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't.
The Braves beat the Marlins 29-9. So, I don't know. When do you see 29s in baseball?
When I play Super Mega Baseball on my Xbox One.
Yeah. They scored 11 runs in the second inning. It was 11-2 after two. And they put up six again in the fifth. It was insane, to say the least. I think there was a point where someone had thrown something like 66 pitches in one inning. It wasn't good at all. And like even some of the Braves, the Braves pitchers weren't great, but the poor Marlins pitchers. Jordan Yamamoto gave up 12 runs, 12 earned runs. Dude, over two
if
and
you
two-thirds
score
innings.
Nine runs and lose by double digits, it was a bad day. When you score nine runs and lose by 20, that is historically – usually if a team scores nine runs, it's going to be a close game or they're blowing another team out. Like if you lose scoring nine runs, you're losing on like 10-9, 11-9, maybe even 12-9. The Jays have gotten a little crazy lately. But yeah. Fucking to lose by 20 in baseball is bad enough. But to score nine runs and lose by 20? Whew, man, Jeter, what are you doing down there?
To be fair, for a stretch, the Marlins were actually kind of one of the teams to beat in the National League.
Well, because no one wanted to be near them because they all had COVID. Just all after passing their COVID tests, they started losing. So.
Yeah, you might be right. 29-9. I don't know if we'll see that anytime soon. I was very busy and preoccupied with Raptors game yesterday. That took up most of my sporting. But when I was flipping through the box scores and checking back to the Jays, and I saw 29-9 all over my news feed, I had to investigate, and I was shocked. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, I think you put the nail on the head. When you score nine runs and you lose by 20, it was a bad day. just to note, they had 23 hits and scored 29 runs. There were only two errors. Every time they got a hit, someone came around. They did not leave many guys on base.
Well, how do you leave a lot of guys on base when you score 29 runs? There's weeks in baseball where teams win every game and don't score 29 runs. Like I'm pretty sure you could probably go back to some like pretty bad baseball teams and find 2 week stretches, 3 weeks, or even months where they might not score 29 runs. Like, I mean, literally, yeah. I'm pretty sure if you go back and look at like the 2014 Tampa Bay Rays or whatever, there's probably months where they didn't score 29 runs. Like, I don't know.
Look, the Jays scored two yesterday.
Yeah, but they scored like 12 and 10 in a bunch of games.
But what I'm saying is two yesterday, two the day before. I mean, it takes a little while to get 29 runs. Usually you'll score 29 runs in a good series. If you're having a good run,
that's about 10 runs. That's almost 10 runs a game. No, I'm telling you right now, teams have gone entire playoff runs without scoring 30 runs.
Sure, they have. Oh, absolutely, they have.
Like it's an obnoxious, obscene number. Like I looked at it on ESPN.com this morning and like spit my Starbucks. I'm like, what? 29? Jeez.
So, the Braves on the 6th of September won 10-3. On the 7th, lost 5-4. So they're scoring runs. The Braves are not obviously Acuna's there. They lost 8-0 to the same Marlins the day before on the 8th.
Baseball's this is what makes baseball special, right? In baseball, the worst team, the absolute doldrums of the league, wins 60 times a year. Generally, not this year, of course, but like if you're a god awful bottom basement dweller, you'll still win 60 games. I think the lowest win total for a Major League Baseball team is like 55 or something like that.
Yeah, it's it is what makes baseball special. The same team that lost 29-9 won 8-0 the day before. So We'll see. I mean, tonight they are, I don't know if they're playing tonight. I'm assuming they are because I think everybody plays from now until the end of time. They're losing 3-2 to the Phillies right now. So the Marlins are not having a great run of it. And I think the Jays have a couple of days off just to take a break. But playoffs are shaping up. Manfred says that they're going to do playoffs in a bubble format. I don't know if you saw that. I'm okay with it.
Baseball's bubbling in the playoffs?
Baseball will be bubbling in the playoffs.
Meanwhile, the NFL is letting fans in stadiums.
Yes.
In all fairness, I say that so condescendingly. Baseball stadiums hold like 80,000 people. There's no reason you can't let 3,000-4,000 people in. Like, there's just no reason. Like, you can. You can easily social distance. 4,000.
You would have to. The only way I see them doing it, and like for me, if you're looking at,
you're gonna see it tonight. There's gonna be fans of the game tonight, isn't there?
I believe there are people in the stands. I don't think there are fans. Like, I don't think it's like actual fans. I've seen some, like, there's people wandering the stadium, but I don't think it's anywhere near, obviously it's nowhere near capacity. I think if you're going to do this, if you're going to allow fans in, you have to allow for things like you have to be screened and, you know, prove that you're able to go in and be healthy, because otherwise you're asking for trouble. The first time someone lets in a group of fans who are asymptomatic and you get a big infection out of it, it's risky business. I don't know what happens. I think that it's kind of ridiculous. I am worried about football because I was worried about baseball. And 2 weeks in, we had two teams that had to like cancel and postpone a bunch of games because they couldn't stay uninfected. It's pretty ridiculous. So I am concerned about it. The NFL players, I think, are a little more strict about how they're doing this stuff, but we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. That's all I can say. It's a bit of a clusterfuck in that they're just going to do whatever they're going to do. Football and the almighty dollar will continue to rule the reason we still have sports going. And honestly,
you say that condescendingly, but if sports shut down tomorrow, I feel like you would go catatonic.
Oh, I'd be furious about it. Look, it's very conflicting because as a human being, I don't think that these people need to be risking their lives for sports. I'm looking at Andy Reid right now on TV wearing a face shield over his hat. Like it's literally.
I have his own. I should turn the shit on.
He's literally got his ball cap on like he was an everyday thing. He's got a face shield around the brim of the hat, and it's like fitted. It looks like it was the ones that were built by Oakley or whatever was doing the face shields. It's ridiculous.
Oh God! Let's move on from
I guess the other thing that happened. Kind of today and probably where we'll spend most of our time is Skip Bayless being Skip Bayless.
We're already the skipper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can go. I mean, we can go wherever you want to go.
No. I'm into Skip Bayless. I've been waiting to destroy Skip Bayless for some time on this show. I think I've mentioned it at the end of like 13 episodes. So I'm here for this.
we've mentioned Skip Bayless on several occasions and the talking heads and, media networks and, you know, go on and on and on. It's today Skip came out and basically called into question Dak Prescott's toughness and I think ultimately his character because he admitted that he had depression at one point. If I'm not mistaken,
he came out in the state. He did the ESPN, the magazine, the cover. He's the cover athlete, and the inside story indicate where he opened up his mental health struggles of saying like COVID and quarantine and lockdown kind of deeply affected his depression that like brought up like thoughts of like his mom dying of cancer and his brother killing himself and they're trying to kill himself. I don't know if his brother killed himself or succeeded, but and that's what he talked about in the course of it. It's a small section of the article. I read the article already, but it's like three paragraphs, maybe, I think it was.
Yeah. So Skip decides that this is the perfect opportunity to call into character or call into account Dak's character and leadership because admitting that he had struggled with a bit of depression won't make him as viable a leader on the football field as someone who is quote unquote tougher. And I'm going to be honest, when you first told me about it, knowing Skip Bayless, I thought he went probably way overboard. He wasn't as bad as initially thought, but it's still pretty ridiculous. I don't understand why someone would think that you're less of a human for admitting that you have these problems. This is exactly the kind of shit that is wrong with the world right now. And like, not just, you know, the sport world, but especially in the sports world, is men in particular, young men, thinking that you have to be this super macho, tough guy, don't have your feelings, you know, better be fully focused all the time, can't have any down days, kind of attitude. And it's quite frankly, it's bullshit, and it's leading to more people dying than necessary, to be frank about it. I think that Skip saying these types of things is not only it's shitty, I also think he's contributing to the general feeling around this kind of struggle that people go through. You know, I've struggled with mental illness. I know people that have struggled with mental illness, and it doesn't make you less of a human. And for someone to say, you know, oh, he's, you know, he probably won't have great, be able to be a great leader on the football field is quite frankly bullshit. And I know that you hate Skip. I hate Skip. What did you think when you first heard this? Were you feeling kind of the same deal or?
Okay. So there's a lot to unpack here. So we'll start here. My first reaction was I saw it on Twitter and it was like the internet was dragging Skip Bayless. And I was like, oh my God, is it finally happening? Thank you. Thank you. And then I saw what it was for and I was mildly conflicted. One, obviously I support Dak Prescott's fucking need to express himself. I don't want to, and I'm not giving credence to what Skip Bayless said either, but I think that, given that I know for a fact, like, I don't know if I've ever been diagnosed, but I've definitely dealt with depression and things of that nature. I think for me, and this is me, and this is not to say that like Dak's invalidated, and I don't think it has anything to do with him being a leader either. I think he's still fully capable of doing all those things. He's still the same football player that he was before that. But I can only speak for my own personal thing is that like, I think mental health is a good thing to be addressed, and I don't have any issue with the conversation. But I also find that a lot of people self-diagnose themselves with mental health issues, then crutch and excuse their way through life, and this does not apply to Dak Prescott. So for me, personally, I my favorite television show of all time is The Sopranos, right? And yep. I somewhat subscribe to, like, there's a scene where Tony says, that, like, you know, whatever happened to Gary Cooper and the strong, silent type? It's like, well, we got someone that we got to talk about your feelings. You got to talk about your feelings. And now Gary Cooper won't shut the fuck up about his feelings. Like, you know, like, some things are probably better left unsaid. But, like, if you're really going through it, and I want to stress this point, and if you're really down, you should talk to people. You shouldn't hold it. But just because one day you wake up and you're not in the best mood and you don't feel like doing something is not an excuse to just say, well, I have some mental illness and, you know, you need to respect the fact that I don't want to do anything today. Well, reality is you probably just drank too much last night and your serotonin's low. There's levels to it. And I find a lot of people love to cling to it and crutch to it because now it's like very taboo to say anything to people about it. That said, what do I think about Skip Bayless saying it? I have no time or patience for Skip Bayless talking about his woe is me childhood where he's been nothing but a shithead his entire career. Skip Bayless has done nothing but attack prominent people for headlines and millions of dollars from moron network execs and the idiots that watch his show. The problem is he's on there with a really highly entertaining, fairly unbiased. He's unbiased unless he's talking about LeBron James, of course, and Shannon Sharp. When he was paired with Stephen A. Smith, I wanted to drill through my ears from both sides, like with a Black and Decker drill. I hate the two of them. But yeah. Skip Bayless was wrong. It was not his place, and I don't care if it's your fan of your team. He should have just, like, deferred and not talked about it. Instead, hopefully, unfortunately, he works for Fox, so it's probably not going to happen. Hopefully, he loses his fucking job, and he can go away and rot in a little hole. I've never forgiven Skip Bayless for starting the Troy Aikman is gay rumor in the 90s. Not because there's anything wrong with Troy Aikman.
With no evidence whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's nothing. He just did it to sell newspapers at the time. And he's a diehard Cowboy fan. I do follow Skip Bayless on Twitter, not because I give a damn what he has to say. I just do it. I follow Skip Bayless for every time the Cowboys lose. I just read his timeline and watch his pain. I hate Skip. Although there's definitely fans in this crowd. There's way more than my suggested number of fans in this crowd. Yes,
there is more than 50%. There is probably 50%, and they're not.
Oh my God, this season is doomed.
Yet we're not even at kickoff, and we're doomed. To your point about people using it as a crutch,
which I did not accuse Dak Prescott of, by the way.
No, and I'll say this. I have no issue if you're feeling down about anything, like literally anything. I think that it's okay to take like a mental health note or a break or a day or whatever you need to get yourself right. And that doesn't mean that you have depression. And I don't think that you should clinically diagnose yourself, because let's be honest, you and I, not doctors. I can't tell you that. I can sit here and say, yes, Steve, one time you were depressed. I can tell you what doctors have told me about me, but that's between me and my doctors. And, you know, if anybody asks me about it, I'm an open book. I've had my own, struggles with the deep, dark times, and I've gone through those, and I've reached out to people for help. And there are lots of places like Landsberg Sick Not Weak. His foundation that he started there is fantastic for reaching out to people and helping people. But, and this is where I get into it, there are also things that are private, and I'm okay if I don't know everything about every athlete's struggle in life. And I'm really okay if Skip Bayless doesn't break every fucking story down about someone's person. Dak opens up for an article. Okay. And that's fine. That's Dak's prerogative. Dak is totally allowed to talk to this reporter about how he feels about the pandemic, which is he was probably asked about. And he probably said, I got a little down, I had some tough times, and that's allowed. That doesn't make him less of a leader. He's still going to lead the Cowboys to a 9-7 season like they always do. They're still going to do Cowboy things. I don't think that makes Dak less of a quarterback, and I don't think that it makes him less of a human. What I don't need is Skip Bayless telling me how this affects Dak and how Dak isn't man enough anymore. And he never said those words, I don't think, specifically, but that was the implication, is that Dak is now a sissy. Dak is now some sort of weak man, because he came out with this and said, I am feeling the way that I'm feeling. And I can't stress this enough, can't fucking stand that stance, because it's none of Skip Bayless's business. And I understand his job is to bring eyeballs to the station, and he is supposed to generate the talking points. And boy, did he generate the talking points today, because we're talking about it. Twitter is raking him over the coals. At Steve Steele 23, by the way, if you want to follow Steve on Twitter, at Armchair Common 2 on Twitter, you can give us a follow. We'll gladly rake Steve and A over the coals, and we'll gladly rake Skip Bayless over the coals. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't appreciate him taking that. It feels like an extra step to go out of his way to call into question kind of who he is as a human because of what he went through, whether he did or didn't. Not my place to say, right?
No. So everything you just said, I agree with. Like, being able to talk about it is a good thing. I'm not saying that, like, talking about mental health issues is a bad thing. I have fear of getting backlash for it. If I felt that way, I would say it with my chest. I definitely think that some people definitely need to be able to talk about it. Dak Prescott felt the need to talk about it with ESPN, the magazine. like, I don't know. Now, Kevin Love did this, I believe, a couple of years ago as well in basketball.
Yeah, he did. With
anxiety and stuff like that. I don't know if people need to hear it from athletes, per se. And I'm not saying that people need to shut up and dribble or whatever. Like, I don't know if Dak should have really discussed that in ESPN, the magazine. He has every right to do so. I'm not mad at him for it. I don't care if Dak Prescott's depressed, happy, sad, whatever. As long as he's still breathing and performing at a high level and making his living, I'm happy for Dak Prescott. Yeah. But I don't know, like, coming out about your mental health struggles, like, is he seeking professional help, or did he just deal with it by himself and think, man, this will get me really good headlines and make me kind of a hero, suddenly put in the ESPN in the magazine? That guy's in the middle of a contract war, right? Like, it's tricky for me. Like, I love people speaking up and, like, really talking about things.
I totally get where you're coming from on this,
though. Yeah.
Like, I totally get what you're saying here.
ESPN the magazine was the place for it.
Well, I think if this is something that, like, and that's kind of the tricky balance with, in particular, talking about mental health, is that, like you said, some people will say anything for any sort of reaction. So Dak, in this case, coming out about his mental health struggles to ESPN, the magazine, could be seen as opportunistic. But if he's also going through mental health issues and is seeking help, then you want to commend him for it. So it's very tricky. It's very touchy. It's difficult because I never want to question a man's motives here. But we are talking about, you know, a lot of money on the line as well. We're not talking about, you know, a couple of pennies here. Wasn't he asking for like $500 million or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, he's asking for entirely too much money. Also, not a really good bargaining chip to talk about, like, you know, mental illness.
In particular with his owner, Jerry Jones doesn't give a shit about.
Yeah, fuck Jerry Jones while we're here. Fuck Skip Bayless, fuck Jerry Jones. By the way, I love Shannon.
Though. Shannon Sharp?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Shannon Sharp. I don't call him Shannon Stewart, but whatever.
Let's go to another talking head here, because just on the subject of the media kind of driving these ridiculous narratives, Stephen A has often been a thorn in my side, mostly because I feel like he just doesn't shut up and doesn't know. I feel like he's hot takes for the sake of hot takes. I feel like Skip Bayless also does this. Stephen A occasionally, and I said this to you earlier, Stephen A occasionally has moments that are poignant and are
definitely has and redeeming moments. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, but it's hard to see through the garbage that he's surrounded by garbage. That's the problem. Everything else he says is trash. So you end up with this, like, are you being sincere right now?
Well, Stephen A. Smith called Steve Nash's hiring of white privilege. So, like, we can go there while we're here. Like, I mean, why not? Okay, so you have 50,000 people in the stadium, but you can't have people singing the anthem in the stadium wearing Breonna Taylor shirts. Oh my God. This is going to be good. This is going to be a long football year, man. Woo. Yeesh. It's coming for the neck here.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, do you want to talk about what Stephen A. had mentioned about Steve Nash? Because initially I was pretty all right with the Steve Nash hiring. I got it. I understood it. But
yeah, Steve Nash got the job because Kevin Durant worked with him in Golden State and told Brooklyn he wanted Steve Nash. And if Kevin Durant tells his franchise he wants someone somewhere, that franchise is very well to be smart and to do what he says. That's how basketball works. Did Steve Nash jump the coaching line? Yes. Is it probably a benefit at a white privilege? Maybe. But Steve Nash got the job because Kevin Durant wanted him. And if Kevin Durant wants you, or LeBron James wants you, or someone of that caliber requests your services, if Kawhi Leonard came out tomorrow and said, I don't like Doc Rivers, I want Nick Nurse, the Clippers would go out of their way to get Nick Nurse. That's just the way the NBA works. People can, like, spin it whatever way you want to spin it. Is Steve Nash lucky to be white and probably helped him get the job? Absolutely he is. Oh, they're kneeling in the anthem. Oh my God, it's like I'm in a different universe. Anyway,
did he get it from white privilege? Maybe.
No, I don't think so. I think he got the job because he got it because of Kevin Durant. To be honest with you, that's what it is.
Yes. Well, and that's the driving force behind it for sure. Did his station in the game improved because of being white? Probably.
No, Steve Nash is a bad motherfucker. Like, I refuse. Like, there's lots of white basketball players that weren't bad dudes. Like, there's tons.
You are talking to a guy who the only basketball jersey I own, is an orange Phoenix Suns jersey with Steve Nash's name on the back. That's it.
I rock heavy with Steve Nash. Probably the worst great basketball player defender I've ever seen. Like, he was atrocious on defense, but I love me some Steve Nash. I will not slander him.
No, I like Steve Nash, and I have no issue with the hiring. I really don't. I do have an issue with Stephen A., but was it Stephen A. that had the great points about acting like a quarterback, or was that Shannon Sharp? And what they meant was being white. Did you see that?
Sorry, say that again about being white?
Stephen A., I believe it was Stephen A. It might have been Shannon Sharp that actually said it, and Skip Bayless shut up. One of the other ones. Someone had mentioned talking about being a quarterback, and they want you to act like a quarterback. And what they mean is they want you to act like a white quarterback. And you and I talked about how basically being a black quarterback in the NFL, you have it a lot tougher than you do as a white quarterback. But when they say act like a quarterback, what they mean is act like a white quarterback. And one of these two jabronis said it. Someone was quiet on the sidelines when it happened, and it might have been Shannon Sharp that actually said it. Regardless, this is what I'm talking about when I say they have redeeming qualities, because sometimes, just sometimes, they're correct. And then every other time it's utter garbage coming out of their heads. I can't get behind it. I don't understand what's going on. This NFL season, for the record, just so everyone's aware of what we're talking about and why we're so surprised, so far we have seen, I don't know, what do you think, 65% capacity in the stadium, maybe 70?
Entirely too many people. Disgustingly entirely too, especially the States. I forget the ickies just looking at it. It's gross.
It's more than half.
Gross. It's gross. And the season is doomed.
The anthem singers were not in the stadium, though, because too risky.
That was the most asinine stuff I've ever seen. You can't have the anthem singers at the stadium, but you can have 40,000 Kansas City mouth breathing rednecks. Like, no. Oh my god, it looks like he has a plastic food bib. Did Andy Reid get COVID and lose weight? We all know if Andy Reid got COVID, he'd die. So let's not pretend that
he's lost some weight, a little bit of weight.
Okay, okay. So there's no jersey swapping, but everyone's coming to hug at midfield before the game starts. Isn't this what you do after the game? What's happening right now?
Oh, they're all linking arms.
That's cool. We all know J.J. White. J.J. Watt probably does not support anything about black people whatsoever, so that's fine. I don't know that. I'm just going to make that assumption. He has that vibe. What in the world is happening here?
I don't understand.
This is not a really good podcast, but like, this is a – I've never seen anything like – are they posing for a photo? Oh, they're all linking arms? Oh, this is symbolic shit. So for the record, the NFL is owned mostly by – ultra rich, ultra white, ultra racist, ultra pedophile, ultra venture capitalist white guys that are only doing this to placate athletes, aka black people, so they can make money off of them. This is hollow. I respect what the players are trying to do, but this is a bunch of horse shit, and I'm about to throw up, so I might just turn the NFL off. Like, I wish any of this mattered, but it doesn't. The owner of the Chiefs is a wild MAGA head. So he just wants to make his money off this team because he doesn't want to lose the season. Because if you lose that NFL TV money, baby, woo, that hurts real quick. So that's all he's doing. At the end of the day,
remember that when Michael Vick was arrested, Arthur Blank was, and I quote, "I heard about it when I was on safari." Motherfucker was on safari. Tell me that isn't some rich white shit.
I mean, I don't want to go on to this classism shit, but like, this is now. What, now they're wearing masks? Like, what in the fuck is going on? This is a joke. This league is a joke. Yep. I don't take these people seriously. Like, they said you can't do face swaps, but you can lock arms. Moments of unity. Chiefs players support equality and racism, justice for all, and police brutality. Oh my God, there's some dude in Alabama right now screaming at his television. There's no such thing as equality. White man better. I can't. I've almost been offended by the NFL now four times, and we're not even snapping to the first game.
We haven't even kicked off.
This is nauseating. This is what we call virtue signaling, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening and if you watch this and if you support this level of virtue signaling, I'm wrong. This is not against the players. This is about Goodell and his cronies. This is disgusting. Oh yeah, make sure you get the white guy flexing his muscles. There you go. Yeah. I mean, Collinsworth and Al Michaels, two white guys in their 60s and 80s, respectively. This is going to get all that much better. Oh, my God. I'm not even at the kickoff. Exactly. Remember, this is the same way that banned Colin Kaepernick, right? Like, oh, my God. Oh,
yes,
oh.
I'm aware.
You know what? I forgive you, Skip Bayless. Fuck the NFL. There, I said it. Let's move on.
I don't forgive Skip Bayless, and I won't do it. I mean... There were a couple of interesting things that happened on the NBA sideline that I do want to get your take on. I believe they're bringing Doris Burke into the booth, if I saw correctly, for the finals or for the conference finals. I don't remember which one. So this will be the first time that a woman is going to be in the booth for a, I think period.
I don't know. I like Doris Burke. I would take Doris Burke over Al Michaels. Not prime Al Michaels, but Al Michaels is 804 years old, and like he could tell you about the first time he met a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So like I'm over Al Michaels. I don't mind Chris Collinsworth. Now here's a guy, Mr. Chris Collinsworth, but like Laramie Tunzel. Remember when they tried to banish Laramie Tunzel because they've someone leaked the video of him smoking weed through a gas mask?
Yeah.
Like all these guys aren't smoking mad weed to ease the pain. Like NFL is so
shout out Ricky Williams.
Yeah, shout out to Ricky Williams. One of the better running backs I ever saw in my lifetime. Not the best, but one of the better ones. A huge fan of Ricky Williams. Shout out to No Limit Sports Agencies.
So if this is what the NFL season is going to be, and I know that we weren't going to necessarily
go
NFL because you're watching. How many games, how many weeks in do you give this? Given that baseball didn't.
This is gonna go the whole season. Where are their Oakley little spit guards? Like,
no, they didn't wear them. No, what? They're not wearing them. They're not wearing them.
Okay, that's fine. The coach has a mask.
Andy Reid has a face mask.
Well, I mean, because COVID will kill Andy's ass real fast. Let's be fair. You can't look at Andy Reid and be like, that's a picture of health. Oh, he misses DeAndre Hopkins right now, though, doesn't he? By the way, shout out to David Johnson. First carry of the NFL season went for about 5 yards, which is going to be his season long, I assume, because I don't think he made more than 2.5 last year. So he's already doubled. Oh my God. Andy Reid looks like Sergeant Slaughter on 1997 WWF Raw with DX. I love this. I'm all of a sudden the NFL's winning me back. And vote everywhere. Oh my God.
The signaling is unreal.
Oh, it's nauseating. I love it. Continue.
I'm wondering how the season is going to go the full season. Obviously, there's a couple
of dollars over lives. If anything America's taught you this year is dollars over lives.
Yes, 100%.
They're bailing out Jeffree Star while freaking letting Americans get evicted left, right, and center. It's America, baby.
I know that you're not paying attention to modern hockey, but we had a couple of blowouts.
I mean, the Bolts are dismantling the Islanders. What's going on in the West? I don't even pay attention to the Western Conference.
The Dallas won the first game, and then Vegas won the second game. I think the third game's on.
I think the winner of that series wins the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it was not pretty for the Islanders at all. They got just completely blown up in a night of blowouts. My favorite story from last week that we didn't talk about at all was actually baseball related. It was when the Yankees complained after losing in the sixth inning. They got blown out after leading, and they complained about the lights at Salem Field as being the reason why they lost, and then also claimed that the Jays were tipping pitches, and it was just a whole lot of that. Over and over and over again.
If you can pick up the signs, you're allowed to tip pitches. You're not allowed to use surveillance system to do so.
Right. So my issue was that tipping pitches has been around forever. It has literally always been around. And secondly, the pitchers that were getting lit up in their post-game interview said, well, I've got swing and miss stuff, and they weren't swinging and missing, so they must have been tipping pitches. No, you had a bad night. I don't know if you know this. You didn't pitch well, and you lost. That's how this works. If you don't play well, you will lose. It's really not that complicated. So it was my favorite story this week, watching teams try to justify their poor play, especially the Yankees. Nothing like an evil empire justifying their poor play and blaming it on literally anything except for poor play. I don't like the Yankees. Fuck the Yankees.
Nobody likes. I'm reading a book right now called "The Yankees Suck." The book ends in about 2004. But if you ever want to have an episode dedicated to how awful George Steinbrenner was, I am ready. I know Steinbrenner, okay. But I don't know. There's something about the tradition of the Yankees that speaks to me. Like I'm not a traditionalist. I'm not a purist. You heard me go on about this in the past. But I just there's something about the Yankees that I
appreciate the history.
It's something about they never change their uniforms. Their guys don't have facial hair. Their hats are the best hats. Their uniforms are the best uniforms. They're professional looking. They and I don't care. I mean, you saw me today at work. I had a designer long sleeve shirt on, a backwards snapback, and sneakers and black jeans. It's not because I like to project that image. There's just something about the Yankee culture. As far as the players go, not their fans. Their fans are literally mouth breathers. But like I'm talking about. The culture of the Yankee itself appeals to me. I wish that if they weren't in my division, I'd probably be a Yankee fan. Or if the Blue Jays didn't exist, I would definitely be a Yankee fan. Unfortunately, the Blue Jays exist and I get to suffer. So, yeah, because if I was a Yankee fan, I would have won 4 World Series in my lifetime instead of just 2. And I would have been a little more older and more appreciated it more as a Yankee fan. But, you know, because the Yankees last won the World Series when I was 25, I would love if the Jays won a World Series in my lifetime. Again, that would be great.
Hey, look, there's opportunity to win this COVID championship, so we'll see what happens.
Hey, if the Jays win it, it's not the COVID championship. It's the World Championship. Damn it. Okay, don't take this from me.
I'm not trying to take it from you. I sat here tonight and I had this like really difficult kind of like thought between myself where I was like really conflicted. And on one hand, I'm very much in it that the Jays are competing and winning and playing well. And when I watch them, I watch them win a game in extras and I literally exclaimed. And I'm like, this is why I'm watching. Because, you know, it's fun. But then on the other hand, I'm also thinking they're playing 60 games, give or take a game, because it's not even guaranteed you get 60 in. And then you have your bubbled playoffs and we'll see how it goes. But it just feels different and weird. And I understand that that's just where we are. But I don't know. It's conflicting. It's very conflicting to me because I want it as a Jays fan. I want the win. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I don't want that winning this year means less to me than winning other years. But what I am saying is it feels different and I don't like that. I wish it was a full year, I guess.
I don't. I wish they never played this year, but the fact that they're
good. That's what I'm saying.
I said this before and I think I've said it again on the podcast before, but I have a really hard time watching COVID baseball. I know I'm here giving the NFL tons of grief for the fans at the stadium, but like, can you pipe in some crowd noise or do something, MLB? Like, good Lord, baseball games are lifeless. Oh, so I love the game of baseball. Like, I watched that Baltimore game a few years ago when the riots were going on and they evacuated. They played an empty stadium game, and that was tough. But like, that was a one off. Oh yeah. Mahomes is back. Oh dear. It's tough. It's hard to watch baseball right now. Like, come playoffs, I'll probably ramp up a little, but like, oh man,
that's what are you supposed to do? I mean, yeah, it's. I watched. I watched Korean baseball. I was one of the people here that was watching.
Man, this is sports so much. Just decided to adopt a whole new league and a whole new country. I love it. I did. Go ahead.
I watched. With intrigue, I watched Korean baseball every morning while we were work from home. I turn it on and it was on. They were already in like the 5th or 6th inning. The broadcasting was horrible because they were broadcasting from their homes with no ability to control the cameras because they were in Korea. And they were just getting a feed from the network. So they just had to kind of go with it. So they weren't necessarily sure what they were focusing on and why, but they just had to deal with it. But that said,
it was baseball.
It was still baseball and I still enjoyed it. And then when the Major League Baseball started back up, I was kind of like, well, it's okay, I guess. And I don't know why it felt different. Maybe it's because the Korean baseball isn't like the big leagues. Those guys aren't as, not all of them. Some of them are talented, but they're not at the same level as Major League Baseball players are. Typically, you go to Korea to either re-find your career or end your career. You know, the Japanese Baseball League is coming up and lots of things are happening, but it is not exactly the A League. It's just not, it's not kind of like the, a lot of the Euro leagues are not the, the best and not the best basketball. Quite good. And a lot of the players are excellent, but it, as a league, you're not seeing the like cream of the, like the creme de la creme in terms of players. I mean, unless you count LaMelo Ball. Is that who's over there? LaMelo?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I don't know. It's LaMelo is in Australia, by the way, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He went to, didn't he go to, he went somewhere first.
Lithuania.
Lithuania first. And then he went to Australia.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't play him in Lithuania because he was, you know, he was an and one mixtape basketball player, and that, that doesn't work anywhere, but it does work for YouTube idiots. Oh man, there's a guy, his name's Mike Korzemba on YouTube. I used to watch do basketball videos until he predicted that Lonzo Ball would be better than, like, probably arguably the prototype for the next great basketball player on earth. And this is when Lonzo was still at UCLA. I unsubscribed to his YouTube channel immediately and realized I was watching a guy that was simulating basketball history through NBA 2K, like he had an educated opinion. And that was the end of that. So if you out there watch, like, you don't have to be a basketball fan. If you out there and you watch people simulate baseball history through MLB The Show and they start reciting nothing but analytic numbers, there's a pretty good chance that you're watching an utter moron. What was I watching the other day? Oh, I'll give you a quick analytic. This is my last thing, a burial of YouTube sports channels. There's a few good ones. There's Urinating Tree, which is an incredible YouTube channel. Secret Base is a great YouTube channel. For sports, Stark Raving Sports is another incredible YouTube channel. I'm putting these guys over because, like, I'm about to bury somebody, but I watched one. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Andy Hoops, and he made a video about how basketball was more physical in the 80s. And then he was like, well, if you look at the one of the highest scoring games in NBA history, it involved the 1983 Detroit Pistons. He's like, the same Pistons that were the bad boy Detroit Pistons. And I'm like, that's the equivalent of calling the 2020 Cleveland Cavaliers the 2016 Cavaliers. There's no base. There's a couple guys left on that team from 1983 that turns into the bad boy Pistons. Just like there's a couple guys in the 2020 Cavaliers that were on the 2016 Cavaliers, but they are not the same thing. There are two guys on that team, sorry, that are members of the bad boy Pistons 6 years later. And he immediately invalidated his argument because he then went into, well, those are the bad boy Pistons and they're known for their tough defense. No, they're not. They're not the bad boy Pistons. Are the 2008 Miami Heat the same as the 2011 Miami Heat? Absolutely not. They're not. Like, are the 2020 Patriots the same as the 2017 Patriots?
No.
No. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my entire life. I immediately lose all – people lose all credibility with me. And YouTube, it gives people such a huge platform now. And people like us, we're using the internet right now to have a platform. And I always make sure I, like, preface things by making sure I give people their proper due. I may say Pascal Siakam isn't playing very well, but you'll never hear me say Pascal Siakam's a bum or he can't do this or he can't do that. But people get on YouTube with basketball reference or football reference or MLB reference and think they know something. And the only thing they know is how to edit videos and take the time to, like, waste their lives on YouTube. This podcast is called Armchair Commentary, and there's way too many armchair experts in sports these days, and it's nauseating. Some of you just need to fucking shut up. There, that's my closing.
Including Skip Bayless and Stephen A. And
absolutely, Skip Bayless needs to shut up.
Yes. Again, If you're looking to follow Steve on Twitter and Instagram, head over to at SteveSteele23. Tell him why you think Spicy P deserves his love right now, or if you agree that he's not playing the greatest. And let us know what you think about the episodes. We'd love your comments and your feedback. Always appreciate it. You can find me over at Armchair Comment 2 on Twitter and Armchair Commentary on Instagram. Thanks for listening.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Armchair Commentary. We'd like to thank you for taking the time of your day to listen. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe. You know where to find us. We're everywhere you can get your podcast. And if we're not somewhere where you want us to be, let us know. We'll make it work. We'll figure out a way to get there if we're not there already. If you are able to support this podcast, please head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. We have many tiers for as low as $2 and $3 a month. You can help support this podcast, help it grow. We appreciate any effort or any help that you guys are able to give us, including sharing with your friends or financial. Whatever you're able to do, we appreciate it. It has been a wacky, wacky week in sports. If you're playing fantasy this week, good luck. Hopefully you grab Jack Schwartz's draft guide. If not, you're on your own, and I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks for listening.